Live from Burbank, California, a city built on raw cookie dough. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's too snooty for a murder-suicide, Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim Earl. Good evening, geniuses,
welcome.
Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're okay. I hope you're feeling rational and reasonable. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to Michael Shermer, who is the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, the executive director of the Skeptic Society. We will be talking about immigration a bit. We've got a great show coming up tonight. We've also got from SNL and the movie Anchorman and the new film Thank You for Smoking, David Koechner will be with us later in the show. From the Stand Up for Peace tour, comedian Scott Blakeman and Dean Obadala. That is a Palestinian and a Jew touring the country in an effort to make it better for everybody by telling their jokes. I'm curious as to how they're holding up together on the road, because that can strain a relationship. You know what I mean, Jim? You were in a comedy team. God knows that must have been hell.
It was a comedy team with a Jew and a non-Jew.
Yeah, I know. I know you, and I know Barry, but it must have been just like a marriage after a certain point. Am I wrong?
It was. It was 10 years. I was closer to him than anybody else, and it was really disturbing.
Well, we'll get details on that later, so stay tuned for that. Were there any weird, inappropriate moments where you're like, we shouldn't be making out?
Oh, no.
Okay, all right.
Yes, there were.
Okay, well, that's
no,
good.
No, there weren't.
Thank you for being honest. Look, folks, over the weekend, there was a tremendous outpouring of dissent. The press says about 500,000 people converged on the Statehouse here in Los Angeles in protest of the Sensenbrenner immigration bill. That means there must have been close to a million, because the press always they underestimate the number generally, and of course the left us overestimate. So if it's 500,000, it said in the paper, there's probably close to 4 million there. At least, I mean, I'm amazed that anybody was doing anything else in the city. I think you know what, folks? Let's rephrase it. It's pretty likely that the entire city of Los Angeles was at the protest except for me and Jim. I watched it from the television because, not because I'm frightened. I just didn't go, and I'm going to be honest about that. But we'll talk about immigration in a minute. A lot has happened in the world today, and we want to make sure that you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. After a weekend of massive protests over Republican-led immigration reforms, President Bush spent the day promoting his temporary work visas plan for non-citizens. Bush pleaded with his fellow Republicans to reconsider harsher treatment of illegals. Quote, let's not let our fear of brown people overshadow our love of exploiting poor people. End quote. Researchers say that pork products from a new strain of cloned pigs are actually good for your heart. Healthy bacon. Now come up with some cancer-fighting Marlboros and a bottle of whiskey that makes me think more clearly, and we're in business, people. Do that. A new gossip book on Barbara Streisand details her numerous well-known sexual partners throughout the decades. The book is confusing many literary customers who think it's a book about Streisand's time behind the wheel of a twin-engine Cessna. The book is called Cockpit. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight.
Cockpit?
Woo! Come on, it's Monday. It was called Cockpit.
Very clever use of juxtaposition of two words.
Oh, you know, I am just so happy Michael Shermer was laughing. I thought he'd be skeptical of the humor, but we got him going. Some people may call themselves skeptics, but few really do the follow-up to honor the title. Our guest is the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine and the executive director of the Skeptic Society. The Skeptic Society 2006 conference will be held the first weekend of June. That's the 2nd through 4th at 2006 at Caltech, and it is on the theme of environmental wars, the science behind the politics. It's going to be featuring Dr. Brian Fagan, Dr. Gregory Benford, Dr. Donald Prothero, Michael Shermer. Dr. Michael Shermer will be there. Special guest Michael Crichton, many others. He is the author of several books, including Why People Believe Weird Things, which was on the LA Times bestseller list. Michael Shermer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, you missed the big story about the 15,000 atheists that stormed the editorial offices of the newspapers because they found 12 blank sheets of paper on the cartoonist desk.
it's a skeptic joke. Thanks, sure. Man.
We don't have very many jokes. So we have to tell them when we can.
Because
if you can't laugh at your own ideological or religious position, you're taking yourself too seriously.
Well, that's
the problem with this whole Muslim cartoonist business.
Uh-huh.
You know? I mean, people have been telling jokes about Jews for, you know, centuries. You know,
yep.
These two Jews are walking down the street.
Sure.
And, you know, people just live with it.
That's right.
And,
well, I think that's what you come up against when you're dealing with religious fanaticism. I would say that there's a good portion of this country's population that are relatively humorless when it comes to seeing themselves in a way that would enable them
humility. You saw Isaac Hayes quit South
Yeah,
Park.
Over Scientology.
And, you know, of course, they make fun of everybody. That's what the show does. And,
right.
You know, he said, oh, it's not right to make fun of somebody's religion. Well, yeah, but the show already made fun of Jews and Christians and,
well, he
and
got,
everybody else.
He's been programmed. I want to talk about that type of brainwashing in just a second. But first, you know, just for our listeners who might not know you, define what a professional skeptic does. What is your job?
Well,
Skeptics
is a science magazine. We're a science education organization. That's why we're affiliated with Caltech. And
mm-hmm.
skepticism is just science. It's just, you know, we're from Missouri, the show me state. We just want to see the evidence. You know, that's nice. Prove it. Okay. Show me the body. If you're talking about Bigfoot, you know, not just grainy videos and blurry photographs and stories about things that go bump in the night. You know, we need hard evidence before we can get to conclusions. And probably I spend as much time studying how the mind works as anything else.
Well, that's what I'm very curious about.
Because most of what we're dealing with have to do with belief systems, the power of belief. You know, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it, or I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it. You know, it's beliefs and, you know, drive how we look at the world.
Were you ever a religious person?
I was. I went to Pepperdine University.
And,
I matriculated in 1976, first graduating class from the Malibu campus. It's a Church of Christ school. I was fairly... I was born again. I was.
So what did it to you? What was the moment where you were like, oh, my God, it's all a lie?
Well, that happened slowly, actually. I was in graduate school. I was taking science courses.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a number of things, not the least of which was I didn't like the intolerance that I saw in myself as well as my fellow religionists. This is the problem. Once you have absolute certainty that you have the real truth, not just it's true for me or it's true for my faith
mm-hmm.
or it's psychologically true, but it's absolutely ontologically true. The universe actually is this way and everybody else is wrong. And furthermore, if you're an evangelical, by definition, you have to evangelize.
You have to annoy people.
We call it Amway with Bibles. You go uh-huh. around knocking on people's
sure.
door and selling God.
Yeah.
And by definition, that's what you're supposed to do. And the problem with that is that it ultimately leads to a certain level of intolerance. You can't help but be intolerant.
Well, I believe at the core, even when people say that they are tolerant of other religions, if they are believers in their particular religion, but they say that, of course, there are other beliefs, in their head and in their hearts, they really are not tolerant, and they can't believe that by virtue of the fact that their God is the one God. So they're just paying lip service
yeah.
to somebody they see is going to hell.
Right. Now, it only becomes a problem when they put that principle above principles of liberty and the rule of law.
And human rights as well.
And human rights. So as long as you can say, I think I'm absolutely right and you're wrong and I'm going to try to talk you out of it, fine, this is America. But if you go, and furthermore, we're going to try to change the laws to make you think the way I think, okay, now wait a minute, or we're going
right.
to kill people in the name of our truth, then you've got the principles reversed.
Well, let's talk about non-religious people just for a second, because, I mean, you did write a book about why people believe weird things. And my question is, why do people not believe rational things? I mean, you know, you have people that are not religious fanatics. I mean, there is proof about, like, we're going to talk about in a minute, about global warming, about the existence and cover-up of mad cow disease, about the existence and cover-up of brain damage caused by aspartame, about the way and the way this government, this administration hides things, you know, in order to allow corporate interests to do whatever they can, even though it kills people. Now, I know that this is true, and many people know about global warming. They know in their hearts that it's true. Are they unable to process that information because they feel helpless? Why do you think people just go on living lives of disconcern for these issues?
Well, what it is one of the cognitive biases that explains a lot of these things is called a confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is where you look for and find confirmatory evidence for which you already believe and you ignore disconfirmatory evidence. Everybody does it. Conspiracy theories are built on this. You connect the dots. You look for things that fit the Da Vinci Code. Let's connect the dots and ignore everything that doesn't seem to fit the story. Everybody does this. Republicans, Democrats, you know, scientists, religious people, whatever, everybody does it.
So you're saying that they
and so you have the model, you have the particular belief, however you got it, which is usually you were raised this way, or your teachers told you, or you read it in a book or whatever, and you're committed. Once you commit to the position, then the mind is built in a way that you seek out evidence to fit it and support it, because it's psychologically reinforcing to have evidence for what you already are committed to, and then you just ignore disconfirmatory evidence, and it's really hard to make the switch. And the way the switch happens is usually it hits sort of a tipping point where you have so much evidence that it just becomes obvious. Like in the case of global warming, I do think that this battle is largely won now, that the evidence is so overwhelming that even the hardcore global warming skeptics will have to come around in the next year.
Well, then how do we fight an administration or a momentum that is just determined to legislate against this reason?
We do it like Chris Mooney did, writing the Republican War on Science. You write books, you write op-ed pieces, you go on the radio, you get on television. This is America. It's a free society. It's a free market of ideas. We have to fight vigilance.
So you're saying that because there are – the thing that bothers me about this current administration and the way they exploit people who are either frightened or narrow-minded when it comes to these things is that they – I have to assume that people like Donald Rumsfeld, that people who are in charge of the intellectual aims – of this neocon agenda, they're not stupid people, and they know that this is a reality. What I don't understand is, what the hell are they thinking? Do they have a plan B? Are they leaving? Are they aliens? Who are these people that will work people's deaths and the Earth's death into their bottom line?
I don't know. It's I guess they're committed to a certain principle, say the spread of democracy, and even to the point of perhaps forcing it on other countries. And if you have that belief, and once you go down the road of making the commitment, it's hard to back out. Like Johnson in Vietnam, it was clear he should have gotten out long before, but you just can't do it once you're down that road. Bush will never say, I made a mistake and we should get out of Iraq. It's never going to happen. Because the behavioral commitments are so powerful that it, the thing about in order for a new idea to be accepted in science, the old professors and scientists have to die.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it comes down to that, a regime change, a change of whoever is in power of whatever the system is.
But isn't this, like, when you talk about their imposing democracy or whatever they're calling it nationwide, which is just a thinly veiled imperialistic agenda in a lot of ways. What my question is this seems to be that reason and what you're talking about, scientific evidence in relation to the sustenance of the species in a world where free market capitalism is the model, it seems almost impossible to fight that no matter what the government system or what administration is in office. Can we address that in a second? Because we're going to have to take a break, and I want to address that, because I it seems to me that what they're willing to do in the name of business and the sacrifices that they're willing to make of our well-being, just regular people, it's above and beyond anything I can understand. We are talking to Michael Shermer. You can go to www.skeptic.com to get information. He's the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, the executive director of the Skeptic Society. We will continue with him in a minute. It is 20 past.
And now he hates our freedoms. Mark Maron.
Hey, that ain't me. No, I don't know. Michael Shermer is with us. He is the publisher of Skeptic Magazine and the executive director of the Skeptic Society. The question I posited, is that a word? Is that a scientific word, posit?
Did it
I posit?
Is now. Yeah.
Did I posit
that
question?
You posited the posited.
The question is that
you
I...
You deposited it.
Now I'm going to redeposit it. I've always believed that the Republicans believe in evolution because I think they're absolutely sure people will adapt to their malignant agenda, and they're just willing to work those deaths into the bottom line, whoever doesn't make it. So what I was asking you in terms of this administration, in terms of the way the world is structured along the lines of industry and capitalism, that it seems to me that because of greed and because of the alignment of politics with business, that they're always going to rule in favor of corporations, which are the primary criminals in terms of causing global warming, in terms of ruining the environment, in terms of putting food out into the world that's unsafe. How do you fight that?
Well, I would dispute some of that, actually. So I'm not sure I'd want to fight all of it. If you start off with the principle that capitalism generates a huge amount of wealth for everybody that they wouldn't have had other, that nobody would have had otherwise. Then you have to factor in the fact that that there is corruption, and then you know it's the worst system except for all the others.
Maybe corporatocracy is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, some of that. So how much government intervention and control in the marketplace should we impose? We need some.
Yeah.
How much? And so, you know, it's hard. That's a tough one. It's very complex. How do you get food? We have plenty of food here. How do you get it to the third world nations? Well, right. They have corrupt governments. How do you overcome that? That's not a capitalist problem. That's a political, not an economic problem so much as a political distribution problem, I think.
Okay, so we want to move on for that. It was interesting because you said it's very complex, and it's interesting because that's the argument that that Christian used against evolution. That's so complex, and you know, clearly I don't understand it, so God must have done it.
I think in the case of Republicans, like anybody else, once you have a belief system in place, and it's next to impossible to even hear contradictory evidence to it, and so in the case of evolution, for example, my approach now is to try to sell them being conservatives, because they're the most skeptical of evolution, that it is not contradictory to religion or even to free market capitalism. I mean, the process of Darwin's natural selection is Adam Smith's invisible hand.
Mm-hmm.
People are comfortable understanding that the economy is a complex system that just happens with a bunch of people running around, and it, out of that evolves this critically complex system, just like organisms are running around just trying to survive
yeah.
and make a living. And also evolution gives us a human nature. It gives us family values, so to speak. It gives us good and evil in terms of we do good things, we do bad things, and so on. So in that sense, I think conservatives and Christians should embrace Darwin and evolution because it actually supports what they already believe. They just don't know it. So what we have is a problem of marketing. Not scientific evidence, it's a marketing problem.
Sure.
And I think it's been mismarketed to them by fundamentalists who think that they can't adjust to it.
How about this? I got a pitch for it. Hey, stupid, wake up! And then you tell them. You think that'd be alienating?
Sometimes that works, but the stupid part often I have found that when you open a conversation saying you're an idiot to believe what you believe, it doesn't always work.
Let's try a couple. Let's say, okay, so let's say that I'm a religious fanatic, and just tell me what I should say to these people, because I engage them. Evolution is just a theory. It doesn't explain everything that much. Oh. There's a God that, I mean, come on, really. Be serious. You think it explains, like, my glasses and a bug? Huh?
My approach to that is to say, hey, stupid.
No. I knew you'd use it. All right, how about this one? The other argument that they always come down to, oh, you only got a minute. This is good. And Dave Koechner just got here. We're going to keep this going. What about this one where they say that, okay, even if you get them on the complexity, it still can be explained by science or the scientific model of evolution and evolutionary studies. What about when they say, well, the force of life, the force that drives life is still unexplainable?
There's a lot of things we can't explain, but that doesn't mean some other position is true. You have to actually have evidence in favor of your position, not against the other guy. So
heathen! Burn him, he's a witch!
So the way it works is you say, all right, even though these guys over here have all this evidence, they can't explain this one little thing, therefore we'll abandon that whole field, and of course we don't do that in other areas.
Right. Okay. Well, I think
so. In other words, it's okay to say I don't know. It's okay to say we can't explain everything.
Yeah, but that frightens them. You have to understand they can't deal with that kind of void, and they have to fill it with God, or else they'll fall into some sort of weird panic.
Some people, most people actually, are not comfortable with with ambiguity. They have a low tolerance of ambiguity.
Well, hang on a minute, Michael Shermer, because we can get to Scientology. Dave Koechner is going to get on board in just a second. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It is about 10:30, so stay with us. Now he's got a low tolerance of ambiguity. Mark Maron, Thank you, Jim. That was very kind of you. Very kind.
And very relevant.
Oh, I'll say.
Yeah.
Our guest is Michael Shermer. He's the publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He's the executive director of the Skeptic Society, which will have its annual conference June 2nd through 4th at Caltech on the theme, The Environmental War is the Science Behind the Politics. And now, you know, David Koechner, who you know from SNL, from Anchorman, his new movie is Thank You for Smoking, and he's also in The Dukes of Hazzard and Larry the Cable. You're in everything. Has sort of popped in, and we're in the middle of a conversation. We're going to give him a formal introduction in a minute, but I want to throw it to Jim Merle, who Michael Shermer is right up your alley, isn't he, Jim?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had a question about religion. By definition, is it possible for a skeptic to be tolerant of religion?
Oh well, I think we have to be in a sense. It's such a powerful social institution. That the idea that it's going to someday just go away is probably unrealistic.
I thought you were a fighter, so, Michael. I thought you were a fighter. I misunderstood.
I think the way to do it.
Get out of my studio.
I'm trying to save those souls one by one.
Okay.
So I only pretend to be tolerant.
An evangelical atheist. I like that.
Oh, after my born again stint when I went door to door, I went back.
Yeah, and
yeah, started saying, I take it back. I was wrong.
Remember me? I was wrong. That's hilarious.
I got this new book.
what book?
Origin of Species.
No. Oh, good. Nice.
No, just kidding. No.
David Koechner, do you have a pressing question for Mr. Shermer?
Not a pressing question. I'm enjoying it. I want to keep the segment rolling because I know you only have Sherm for a brief time.
Sherm.
Let's get right back to the business of Sherm. Oh, the only thing I had that you'd posited earlier, the way that... Hey, stupid, when you're trying to change their mind, if you do it in a fun, folksy, congenial way, then they'll listen.
Yeah.
Like, hey, stupid, I'm talking to you. They go, he's talking to me, he called me stupid.
You're one of us, come on.
No, seriously, everything you believe is wrong.
Yeah. What? Well, can I have a drink?
Yes, you can still drink, but listen.
Okay. Is that true? That's sort of true.
If you speak
their language.
Absolutely.
I find that's also the power of humor. If you've got a joke that's got a real hook to it, that if you can put something in somebody's head that makes them see something like they've never seen it before and they felt like they came upon the thought themselves, then that can change minds.
That's right. Make it their idea.
Yeah.
And they have a good laugh about it.
Right.
You got to laugh at yourself and your beliefs. You know, if you don't, somebody else will.
and then
you'll be the butt of the joke.
Right. And then you might get yourself killed, apparently, in this particular world.
Well, we at Skeptic, we've never been sued. We've never been shot at. I've never had any death threats. Basically because I'm more interested in the ideas rather than how much money they make or who they're sleeping with or how goofy their person. We've done stuff on Scientology. We've never been sued by them. I just look at the claims. Okay, what is it you're saying here? I mean, what was this? Xenu came from a planet? Where's this planet? You know, if you just address the claims and not, you know, how much money Tom Cruise gave the church, you know, because who cares? I mean,
I think it's starting to turn out that whole sort of legal wing and also the numbers of people that are in the church is kind of amplified and distorted. And I think they're sort of pulling back from that reputation.
The best article I've ever read on Scientology was in last month's Rolling Stone.
We interviewed her
and we talked
to her.
It's true. Incredible story.
It was interesting because they got, you know, she was very objective. She was a decent reporter. But when we talked to her, she was very wary. Not only she didn't want to come off as biased, but I thought they got to her a little bit.
Maybe. And that's how all belief systems work. I mean, from your perspective, how can anybody be a Republican or whatever?
No, I understand it all.
You know, you walk into the Scientology office, they don't tell you the whole story of the Xenu and the Battle of the Planets. So they give you a personality test.
Right, they give you a taste.
And everybody fails it.
Yeah.
Looks good. Uh-oh. No, we're going to have to work on this. You can take the first class.
And most of these people are fragile, insecure people. Look, I am not confident enough not to at least acknowledge and understand why people believe in stuff. I read a lot of different things, but I've said this before, I will not pick up Dianetics because I don't know what page it happens on. And I don't feel that confident in myself to start going, wow, some of this makes sense. There's no reason I should fight all of it. And the Celebrity Center looks like a nice place. I'll go in and have a free snack.
And they got good snacks there, too.
Have you been there?
No, I've never been there. I've heard the stories.
Wait a minute. Who are you working for, mister? Well, Michael, I want to thank you for being here. This is a lovely conversation.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I had a good time.
Well, I'd like you to come back sometime if it wasn't that big a deal.
I would have brought all my jokes. I didn't know this would be so funny.
You got more jokes?
This rabbi's walking down the street and he's got a parrot on his shoulder. And a guy walks by and says, where'd you get that? Parrot says, Brooklyn. They're all over the place. See, you can tell jokes about other religions. It's all right.
I think I just laughed uncomfortably. I'm not sure what happened there, but it was a genuine laugh nonetheless. So, Michael Shermer, if you guys want to see what he's up to, go to www.skeptic.com. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. Now, he's got I'm going to do this on the air because I think it's important to see how the inner workings go. He's parked in the lot, so he's got a ticket, and we have no real way to validate that ticket.
I was going to pay for that.
See, that's right. So why don't we just pay for it, and then
the parking attendant may be gone.
Oh, see, that's a gamble we have. We apply logic to this. It's like if you wait around long enough, there's no guy there anymore. Thank you, Michael Shermer. We're going to finish up with Dave Koechner, who you will see, and thank you for smoking. Here's a little clip from that.
Bobby J works for safety. The Society for the Advancement of Firearms and Effective Training for Youth.
You know, you can beat a breathalyzer by sucking on activated charcoal tablets.
Really? Maybe we should change our campaign to if you must drink and drive, suck charcoal.
Yeah, but don't the police wonder why you're sucking on charcoal?
There's no law against charcoal.
Koechner, that was David Koechner from the new movie Thank You for Smoking. Now, David, global warming could not have more scientific proof to the very least establish its existence. Why do people refuse to make it a priority in terms of what they demand? Am I reading the wrong thing?
No, you're
not. Can you go ahead and
answer
the question?
Yes, I can, because they're too caught up in their consumerist spending.
Yes! There you go.
I guess we are a capitalist society, but I think the number one religion in this country is consumerism.
Is eating.
It's all consuming.
Absolutely.
That's all we do. That's all we care about. If I don't get my French fries, now there's a problem. But until then.
Absolutely.
I don't care about anything. You keep me fat. You keep me happy. Give me movies. Give me whatever.
Keep it coming.
Give me a new car. You're going to guarantee that loan? Great.
Yeah, great.
I can get
and buy more
debt?
Stuff.
Yes.
I've actually said on stage that I believe they should change the slogan for America from Land of the Free, Home of the Brave to America, All You Can Eat.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That says absolutely everything.
Round the clock.
Yes, and we'll eat other countries too.
Oh, absolutely. That tastes good. It's a little spicy, but it's okay. You know, we'll learn how to digest it.
It's amping up my cholesterol, but that's okay.
So now I'm finding out, I'm poking around for information on my buddy Dave Koechner here, and you were actually a political science major. Was that just something you did to get through school?
Or? No, I was. I was a political science major for 3 years, and then I quit going to all my classes because I realized I'd never stepped foot on, up to that point in my life, I'd never been on a golf course.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realized, I'm not going anywhere. Everyone's very wealthy and connected.
Right.
What am I going to do? Become a public defender?
Right.
Or
and then,
teach?
And then the question came, where's the keg?
Exactly.
That was the last couple of years.
Exactly.
I know. I went to the same college, or one just like it. So it's weird. I actually have some fairly legitimate questions about your comedic past.
All right.
If we could. There's something I've always been fascinated about that I've never really talked about in public or with somebody, because we're in the same business in certain ways. And I know that there are a lot of cats who came out of Chicago, who did improv, who did Second City, which you toured with, and you were also with Improv Olympic. And you guys become, you know, very efficient comedy actors with a lot of range, whereas stand-ups like myself, we're good if we can do exactly what we do.
Right.
Now, what I want to know is when I watch people like Farley or yourself or other people who come out of Chicago, is that you somehow or another were able to figure out through a process just exactly what's funny about you. Now, was there a series of characters that you used to repeat when you did Second City or Improv Olympic that just became the right fit for you?
Well, yes, in a way, and then no as well. At the Improv Olympic, or the IO as it's now called, you would challenge yourself to a greater degree to come up with something new and original every time you were on stage.
Right.
And there was a time where I was getting on stage literally 6 nights a week, much like a stand-up would. You just go up wherever you can.
Right.
Who, you know, guys would throw together groups, whatever. I think the different dynamic is that you're having to do a scene work as opposed to a solo act.
Right.
Which was a stand-up has to relate to himself and the audience. You know, he's got to get the ball in the air the entire time. Whereas in a scene, an improvisation, you can build the tension. You can be silent. You can work slowly.
You can listen. Wow, imagine that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think those affect the dynamic of why, like the point you're making about why actors and stand-up sometime, or improvisers and stand-up kind of have different styles.
Different tools, yeah.
Exactly. And really, it is all about working that muscle. Every time, I still think, every time you get on stage, and that goes for you and me the same, you get better every single time. There's a little fear that goes away. You learn something new about yourself. You just get better. I still believe that. I mean, I still do a weekly improvisational show here in Chicago. Here in
LA. Well, I'm taking you back, aren't I?
You really are. Let's reminisce for a little bit here in Los Angeles. I remember when.
Yeah.
But
I think that's true.
I do too. Now, the difference of being in Chicago, I think you're less affected by Los Angeles. You're just doing the show for the people and for
Right. You don't say who's here. Oh, that guy's here from HBO. Oh,
you're doing
no.
it for art's sake, so everyone wants to put on the best show possible, not necessarily shine.
Right. I get you. Yeah. And I find that as I get older, the moments that I really cherish after a performance are the weirdest, most not funny moments. They're like so personal and weird that no one could even understand. Like, I thought you were just screwing around. That wasn't even a laugh line. Yeah, I know. But
I know.
That was that moment where I knew where I was and what I was doing. So, all right, let's talk about the movies. Before we get into the new movie, you want to give us a little taste of what the new the race car movie, the Will Ferrell movie?
Oh, Talladega Nights.
Yeah. How'd it go?
It went great.
Yeah.
Down there in North Carolina, everyone's really
What'd
nice.
What'd you play?
I'm a member of the pit crew. I'm Herschel Bundt. Herschel thinks he's in charge all the time, and much to the chagrin of the other pit crew members. Let's see.
Which voice does he have?
You know what? Pretty much, I play so many rednecks that I chose not to play one.
Okay.
And halfway through the movie, I thought, who am I? I don't have yet another one of my redneck voices.
Well, that's what I was kind of getting at with the other question is that because you seem to level off on a kind of like rural kind of rubish charm that you bring to a lot of your characters.
Right.
And I just was curious as to where that evolved, that, you know, what scene that happened in.
Oh, I'm from Missouri.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's where it comes from.
So from birth.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And I grew up most of my life thinking I didn't want to be a hick. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
Because in Missouri, like it or not, and I'm not slamming the good people from where I'm from. Uh-huh. They speak like hicks.
Yeah.
It's not southern. It's not lyrical. It's not like you're from Alabama or Mississippi. And the nice lyrical thing. You're just from Missouri. It's a hick. It's a flat. You're Mark Maron and, heard your radio show and,
I didn't understand it.
I certainly didn't understand it. Heck, for a long time, I wanted to fight you. Until you bought me a cold one. So I was determined.
Can you just say, I like Ed Schultz?
I like Ed Schultz.
that's good. Yeah.
Oh, we call him Eddie Schultz, Big Ed Schultz.
Yeah.
He sold me a car in eighth grade.
That's it.
Right. So I was determined to not do that, but then I find myself on a Hollywood Hall. See, I think the redneck movie is the new Western.
Do you?
Well, because they don't make Westerns anymore. They just make movies about rednecks and hillbillies. And I've been in every one of them. And apparently I'm the new Slim Pickens or Walter Brennan. If you're going to make that movie, I like to think myself more of a Glenn Ford of the redneck movie.
Yeah, why not?
Because I'm so handsome.
Yeah, why not? Slim Pickens was great.
I love Slim Pickens.
A lot of people, like, I've always thought with Hollywood, with the pantheon of stars, that since the beginning of Hollywood, once expanded in the studio system, a certain number of archetypes were established.
Yep.
And as each generation comes, a guy will fall into that groove.
Well, I actually, not to be corny or too boorish about the whole thing, it all goes back to Commedia, and there are like 8 or 9 different groups, and they all fall in.
Wow.
Yes. I mean,
I got to take notes
now.
We
could do a really boring show about all the Commedia archetypes and absolutely you'd label all
right.
of them.
Well, hang out. Well, no, we're going to come back. Right. We're talking to Dave Koechner. We'll talk about the movie and Commedia, apparently, and the archetypes that were established.
And skepticism. With.
So hang out, will you?
Throw some country music.
Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
And now he's wearing the depression patch. Mark Maron.
Are you kidding? I got two of them on. Hey, folks. Welcome to the show if you're just tuning in. If you're still here, you know that David Koechner is here. David Koechner, who does a monthly show here in L.A. that you got to see. It's the Naked Trucker and T-Bones. You still doing that every month?
Still doing it. You know, we just got some great news. We got picked up for 6 episodes. On Comedy Central, we're going to have our own TV show.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, the hell is Dave going to do that with no pants?
Without pants, that's exactly how. Risk taker that he is, all for the audience's enjoyment.
Can you explain to the people what exactly it is? Because it's a fairly esoteric event, because you can only see it here.
Yeah, and, well, the Naked Trucker and T-Bone Show, I call it Hillbilly Art House.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can describe it as Abbott and Costello meet Martin and Lawrence on the way to hang out with Jack, the ghost of Jack Kerouac and Joseph Campbell.
Your character is a trip, man.
Yeah.
I mean, just like smoking them weird long Moore cigarettes, and you're wearing a jumpsuit sometimes, aren't you? And you got glass on. There's a Hunter S. Thompson vibe to it. There's some sort of weird sexuality to the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Because Gruber's sitting there naked behind his guitar, and you're flailing about with a booze.
The best part is the straight man is the naked guy's a straight man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a trip, man.
Halfway through the show, people go, "Oh, he's the one taking care of me." I'm sharing his point of view.
Yeah, you got. That's, I'm excited. Man, congratulations. Thanks. On that show, and congratulations on all the movies I saw. Thank You for Smoking. I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a pretty earnest attempt at satire.
Yeah.
It wasn't a whack job, wacky comedy.
Right.
The character you play was not really as over the top as some of the other guys you've played. And
right.
You had to play off Aaron Eckhart, who was playing a pretty subtle, straight character for a satiric character. Is that kind of difficult when he's just kind of on the level and you've got instincts that are, you know?
Well, no, honestly, it wasn't. I not to stroke Jason Reitman, but he did a great job of holding everybody in the line. He knew exactly what he wanted. He had a great book to start from, and he accomplished it.
This book is about a tobacco lobbyist.
Right.
And I want you to set up the movie for the people that don't know about it.
Thank You for Smoking in theaters now. It is a satire, which is a dirty word in Hollywood, of course. Satire. Mm-hmm. Well, no, we're not going to do that.
They just don't know what it means.
Aaron Eckhart plays a tobacco lobbyist, and he is trying to help his son negotiate the waters, the
moral waters.
Moral waters of
right and wrong.
Right and wrong, being a pre-adolescent. And so he's starting to have all these questions, and especially questions like, "Dad, what is it that you do?"
Mm-hmm.
And on the face of it, his dad has a pretty horrible job.
Right.
Shilling for tobacco, which obviously kills people. He understands that, but I think his character really loves the challenge. And the point of the movie, and I think the book, was to take on the attitude of you must accept everything you're told, and I think Christopher Buckley's bucking that idea of like, no, let's talk about everything we're told. It might be right, it might be wrong, but don't just decide without the argument.
Right, free will versus censorship versus making things illegal versus choice. And it's a great movie. The courtroom scene's great. And you play basically the spin meister or the lobby guy for the firearms industry.
That is correct, Bobby J. Bliss.
Yeah, it was a good part, dude.
It was great.
It was real funny.
Yeah.
And Maria Bella plays the spin kind of lobbyist person for the alcohol.
Yeah, Polly. Yeah, they were wonderful to work with. I'd never met them before, but we were able to get into a nice rhythm right away.
Yeah, you felt that. You felt that.
It was awesome.
I thought the movie was tight, and it was touching, and it had a lot of heart to it. And I thought all you guys did a great job. And, wow, how was that for blowing some smoke?
That was good.
Yeah, you like that?
I did.
Good?
Yeah, yeah.
How's the movie doing at the old box office?
You're talking about per screen average? Because we're kicking everybody's butt per screen. That's Hollywood talking at you, folks. They're platforming is what they're calling. So it opened in Los Angeles and New York, and then this last weekend at some other major markets, and next weekend they're adding 64 more cities or screens. And they might only go up to 600. I don't know. If it gets popular, obviously they go up to 1,500 or something like that.
Well, I hope that happens. Good luck with it. Dave Koechner,
right,
thanks for
Thank
being
you.
With
Mark
us, man.
Mark Maron, M Squared. You better listen.
Good seeing you, man.
You too.
You're listening to a man who still has Cheney Buckshot in his ass, Mark Maron. Live from Burbank, California, where you can get C-sections on demand, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, all the power of Rome cannot stop him, Mark Maron.
I didn't even know Rome was a contender still. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. I'm still here. Don't worry.
I know you're still here. I'm thankful you're here. Did you have a good weekend, man?
Oh, yeah. I saw Heather's movie.
Oh, that's right. It was at the Silver Lake Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
That was your girlfriend, Heather.
Yes, right.
Your significant other, your live-in.
She wrote a movie, and it was produced.
How long of a movie was it? Was it a long movie?
A little over an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little
That's
over
like
long.
A long movie yeah. for an independent project.
It's a feature.
And it went well? That's not. Is it a feature? Oh, it is a feature. Is it officially a feature over an hour?
It went very well. It's a Tom Waits theme type movie, and she wrote the screenplay, and it won an award, I think.
Wow, well, congratulations to Heather, then. That's what I say. In a few minutes, we're going to have from the Stand Up for Peace tour, comedian Scott Blakeman and Dean Obadala. I never know if I'm saying that right, Obadiah, Obadala. I've talked to both of them. I've known them for years. They've brought someone with them, Aaron Cater. So we've actually have a Jewish comedian, a Palestinian comedian, and I believe Aaron is also of Palestinian descent, but he's with another franchise. I think he does the Funny Arab Guy comedy tour, and Scott and Dean are doing the Arab and a Jewish Guy comedy tour. It's a big market for this stuff now. You know, there's communities out there that dig it, and a lot of different people are coming out. So we'll get them all in here and see if they really do get along. I believe Scott brought his wife, too. Maybe we could just facilitate some sort of strange Middle Eastern conflict as opposed to, you know, going against what they're trying to do. But before we do that, there's a couple of things that happened over the weekend and happened today. Before we get into the Senate Judiciary Committee's vote on the Sensenbrenner immigration bill, let's talk about the weekend. The same committee has set a hearing for next Friday on Senator Russ Feingold's proposal for censure of the president for breaking the law by wiretapping without warrants. This is good news. Apparently, Feingold annoyed Arlen Specter, who is the chair of that committee, to the point where Specter's like, all right, we'll listen to him. And Specter's a Jew from the other side of the aisle, and Feingold is a Jew from the other side of the aisle. And this is Jew-on-Jew annoyance here. And I'm just glad that Feingold is going to get his proposal heard, and it's going to be on the floor. Only a couple of Democrats have come out to support it publicly, but I think it's important that it's out there. I don't know why so few Democrats have gotten on board. I think that the Democrats' fear of supporting Feingold's censure, of their fear of the Republicans using it against them, is actually making the Republicans use it against them. That's what I see that's happening in the news. On the other thing that was revealed over the weekend is that I am personally obsessed with the investigation into Jack Abramoff, Casino Jack, and the Indians. And now the investigation is looking for connections to the murder. This is murder now. And I knew this could happen. And if you're keeping up with this, then you'll know what I'm talking about. If you're not, I have not the time to explain it to you. But Gus Bulis was this guy that owned the boat casinos that Abramoff and his partner wanted to buy. This is where the fraud charge came from. He was shot by some mobsters. And it hasn't been brought up to this point whether or not Abramoff would be investigated or to his links to the shooting. But I think it would just be unbelievable if we could link congressional corruption to mob hits. Don't you?
Wow. And murder?
Especially with the new season of Sopranos, you know, premiering and going now. We're into episode 3. I think it'll all tie into culturally tie in.
We'll link this to the Black Dahlia, I hope.
Yeah, well, boy, that'll take some work. But maybe we can get Shermer back here to refute that conspiracy if you put it together, Jim. That's your assignment.
Okay, I'll do that.
Link Jack Abramoff to the Black Dahlia killings.
Next week.
All right, now let's get to the topic at hand. If you can call in the next 2 minutes with a progressive view on how immigration should be handled in this country, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150, I'd like to hear it, because there was an amazing outpouring of dissent. 500,000 people converged on the State House on Saturday here in Los Angeles to protest the Sensenbrenner immigration bill, which basically said that if you're an immigrant, you're going to be arrested and charged with a felony and sent home. If you touch an immigrant, you're going to be arrested and charged with a felony and put in jail. If you help an immigrant in any way, you might be shot. Wasn't that extreme, but it was similar. But after 500,000 people showed up on Saturday in the protest, which is probably closer to a million, all through the weekend, protests broke out all around the world, all around this country, certainly. Today in L.A., thousands and thousands of students. It was Cesar Chavez Day today. They left school, and they hit the streets to continue protesting this bill. And whether or not the Senate heard it or not, they did not go with the Sensenbrenner bill today. The Judiciary Committee went with another version of the bill, our inspector's version of the bill. But it was interesting today because our mayor here in Los Angeles, Mayor Villaraigosa, got in front of the thousands of students who were protesting and made this comment.
They've played by the rules, they've sacrificed, and now that you've come to L.A., to City Hall, to register your opposition to this bill, you should know the following. The city of Los Angeles has passed a resolution 2 weeks ago, in opposition to the Sensenbrenner legislation. I signed that. Now that you've come, it's important that you go back to school. Maybe. You know what?
Hear that? Hell no, we won't go. They've appropriated the chant of the anti-draft protesters, I think, from Vietnam originally, and have used that. It's school. It's not war. But we understand your sentiment, but it's school, and we understand the passion that one might have against an education, but you can go back to school. But what did happen today, and whether it was a response or not to the protest, is that the committee, the Judiciary Committee, passed a bill today that would, it's still a pretty extreme bill. It would double Border Patrol. It would authorize a wall of vehicles and agents, not necessarily the wall that they want to build in the Sensenbrenner bill. It would not seek to prosecute churches, charitable organizations, humanitarian organizations, or individuals for helping or feeding or touching illegal aliens. It would seek to legitimize as citizens roughly 11 million illegal aliens that are already here without them returning home. They would have to pay a fine. They would have to learn English. They would have to study American civics. They would have to get on the existing line of people already applying for citizenship. Now, it's interesting because I don't hear a lot of progressive viewpoints on this. You know, I listen to the station, and I think a lot of people are on the fence with this. They don't know where they stand with this. Some people are just like, let them all in. That's what America's built on. I don't know if it is built on that specifically.
No, it ain't.
and some think, like, this goes too far. There's not far enough, both right and left. Some Republicans are making the issue that the jobs that these people are taking should be available for current citizens, American citizens that are already citizens here in this country for when the economy hits the skids. Isn't it there already for most people in this country? Aren't they already in trouble? Does that have any bearing on whether they will take these jobs or not? I don't know. Other Republicans are perfectly fine with the cheap labor, no matter where it comes from, as long as it's keeping the economy afloat, the cheaper the better. And also, they're going to use this as a wedge issue. That, you know, some Republicans are going to fall on one side, some Republicans are going to fall on others, depending on their constituency and what the needs of that constituency is. But, you know, what progressives think, I don't know. Jim, let's listen to Robert real quick here in Los Angeles, and then, Jim, you tell me what you think. Robert, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm right here in Los Angeles, and I'm right in the middle of the situation that happened over the weekend. And I can tell you one thing. 20 years ago, there was an amnesty already. And a lot of the people that, you know, got their documents back then,
yeah,
all, you know, it just created the problem we have today. I think the United States has to go back to the basics, which is to exercise the laws that we already have in the books, which are being ignored by government, by the business people, and by the overall, you know, people around the country. I think that, you know, I'm a Latino. I pay my dues. My family used to wait 20 years to get their papers, but they got it through the system like everybody else that is outside this country right now. I don't think it's fair that people that is outside this country waiting for the quotas, et cetera, have to wait and see through the news what they're seeing right now, that all you have to do is come over here and wait 20 years. And I start a demonstration in the streets of Los Angeles in order to force the government to give you something you don't deserve.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a great point that Robert made here in L.A. And what people don't realize is that the IRS facilitates a lot of these illegal aliens that stay here. Is that they people don't realize this, but I asked our producer Brendan McDonald to look into this, and then we looked into it. And apparently, in the mid to late 90s, the IRS, in an effort to combat fake social security numbers, initiated an option for illegal immigrants or immigrants illegal or otherwise to get a taxpayer identification number with an assurance that the information would not be shared with immigration and naturalization services. And the IRS, they knew where their bread was buttered, and this is why so many illegal immigrants today, and in the protests on the street, you heard a lot of them saying we pay taxes, and that is how they pay taxes. So a lot of this is about politics, and it's going to be a pivotal issue, as I said, in the midterms. And what were you just saying, Brendan, in terms of what this fellow said, that the laws that were in place, you know, are being overlooked.
Right. They're being exploited by Republicans who want cheap labor.
Right.
And I've always believed that, but hearing it come from him, who a guy who said, you know, I went about this
the right way
to get citizenship, mm-hmm. and I did it because I was following the law, and now I see that the law is just being abandoned, and when is it being abandoned? It's being abandoned under a Republican administration.
Right, and you can tell Bush has no desire to get rid of illegal immigration. It seems to me that, you know, the Republican policy is to facilitate as much of it as possible until the country rises up, and says stop it. And now there's honestly a war between these two differing ideas on how to handle this.
Well, Texas' economy is built on illegal immigration, cheap labor, mm-hmm. slave labor, serfdom. I mean, just most of the lower southern states are.
Okay, let's take a call from Donald. Well, we still got a minute. Donald, how are you? You there? Donald, hello? Nope, guess not. I can't seem to pick up the phone. But look, we're going to have in here. Oh, there he is. Let's see if we can get it now. Donald, you there?
Yeah, here I am.
Okay, man. What's up?
Here's what I think you need, Mark. I think that you need a Marshall Plan like we had in Europe at the time. I mean, we're spending billions of dollars over in Iraq and in other places in the world. And the reason that the Hispanic people are coming here to America is because they don't have any money or anything to support themselves with. If we would build up the economies in Central South America, they wouldn't have to come here.
Right. Well, thanks for your point, Donald.
Well, NAFTA.
Take care.
NAFTA is contributing to that. NAFTA is screwing over
the World Bank and NAFTA. They go in and
they
fix the system and then they pull it out.
Yeah.
Well, between Clinton, it's not all about Clinton. It's also about the World Bank's politics and the way that they take over, weaker governments and just facilitate that trade and then leave the weaker governments in shambles. You going to play us out a little, Jim?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
I have a little song here kind of dedicated to the Mark Maron Show.
Mark Maron Show. Here I'm on the radio. KTLK. Every night from 10 to 12. I want to hear it when it's late at night. You can have your cake and eat it too. Some other verse that I can't think of right now. Mark Maron Show.
Yeah.
Lay across my big brass.
Hey, now wait. Okay. All right. This now it's a little weird.
And now back to Anderson Cooper's butt boy, Mark Maron.
Oh, come on, man. What is that? Thank you, Jim. I love it. It's fine. Say what you want. Whatever makes you feel better. Hey, I just want to say this. Myself, Jim Earle, and Mishna Wolf will be appearing at Steinway's this Saturday at 8 o'clock. That's April 1st. Go to markmaron.com for info and tickets. You got to call a lady to get your reservations. I'm serious. It's a classy joint. I'm not gonna downplay this gig. It's gonna be fun. Jim Earle hasn't done comedy in probably 6 years, so how could that be bad? And my wife is very funny, and I will find something to talk about. I seem to do it most of the time, and I'll do some funny stuff, and maybe I'll read from my diary or something. Just come. All right. The phone number here is 877-520-1150. If you want to call us and contribute right now. We have a very big meeting of powerful minds here. I know there's one place where Palestinians and Jews are getting along, and that's here, right now in this studio. It's a beautiful thing. Scott Blakeman and Dean Obadala are comics. Aaron Cater's a comic, too, but I don't know if I'm lumping you all together because you do a different thing. And you're just on the sidelines tonight?
Yeah.
All right, Cater. All right. They have been touring the country with their Stand Up for Peace tour, and they bring the show to the Claremont Colleges this Wednesday, March 29th, please welcome Scott Blakeman, Dean Obadala, and Aaron Cater on the side. Little Aaron Cater on the side here. So, fellas, I'm not going to let this Arab rain on
his show's different. We do Stand Up for Peace. He does Stand Up for Hamas. It's a whole different show. He's Hamas's favorite comic 3 years in a row, Aaron Cater.
But, well, it's not a bad political alignment to have right now, is it there, Cater? the Hamas. They seem to be in charge of things, don't they?
Well, if Hamas gets it together, just like any other crazy group, then we'll all accept them, right?
What are you looking at me for? It's your people.
It's not a good thing.
All right. Okay. That's from a Palestinian. All right. Yeah. Scott Blakeman, the Jew.
The Jew. It's a game show. No, I think it's a good thing to get, you know, former terrorist organization in government because then they don't have to be a terrorist organization anymore. They can be official.
A legitimate terrorist organization.
Well, they could just be, no, we should, because they would say, we don't want anybody to talk to. It's like, as if you have to love the people you're talking to. You know, that's just, you have to talk. That's what our show is all about.
A terrorist organization that's willing to negotiate and has the capacity to negotiate with larger nations and can be welcomed to the table of the world stage.
Absolutely. And they also had nice hats for the election campaign. That was one of the reasons they won. They had green hats and T-shirts, and that's worked for the Republicans, I think, in the past.
Yeah. Sure, or purple thumbs, or, you know.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, it's all about the promotion. What are you shaking your head about, Dean?
I don't know what the hats are
doing. I know what he was just doing. Did you see him? Does he do that a lot? He's going, listen to the Jew go on.
I didn't say the word Jew. I didn't think the word Jew, but thank you. No, who knows? I mean, obviously, there's a history of terrorist groups evolving. You know, ANC, even honestly, Shamir and Begin were both terrorists, and then they went evolved and become diplomatic world leaders.
You're just going to rip it wide open, aren't
you? It's the truth. They were. I'm not saying the British labeled them. They had bombed the King David Hotel. But that's the point, is not to focus on the past. It's other than being instructive. The future is there's potential for peace. And there's the election actually today, right now in Israel, is the election for the Knesset.
The show
and
could
the Prime Minister.
You know, sway things.
All I got to say right now, you guys are hilarious.
This is so funny. I didn't know this was a funny show.
I would not miss this comedy show. I don't care where you're driving in from, but if this was any taste of what we're going to get, I'm kidding.
Well,
you,
no, we stand up. We don't sit.
Let's talk about the snails. You have snails crawling on your sidewalk out here, Mark. I'm from New York. We don't have snails on our sidewalk.
I know. It's the weirdest thing, and there's dozens of them. You got to be careful. You don't want to step on them because then you feel bad.
It's unnerving. In New York, the homeless guys would eat them. They're protein. This is amazing. You have a food source growing, a gourmet food coming out of your plant
line. Great. Now people are going to be driving by, stopping, picking up the snails.
Cooking, eating.
Why? I've only eaten escargot once, and it was pretty enjoyable. I don't know if those are the same kind of snails, but go ahead and take them. You can take them.
I can't touch them. They're disgusting looking.
They're clear channel snails.
Well,
yeah. So now we're
genetically modified, probably.
Yeah. Just to appeal to everybody.
Do you know where we met for our show? We met on J-Date, Scott and I.
Let's get it on now.
That's one of our jokes from the act. You can catch us Wednesday at
No, we're looking forward to doing Pwn. Actually, you know, we were looking at George Mason being in the Final Four, and that actually was one of our best shows. And George Mason, they named their dorms after past presidents. And I'd love to live in a Clinton dorm, the most fun 24-hour partying. They actually have a George W. Bush dorm, which just attacks other dorms for no reason whatsoever. So
we're going to be back with Scott Blakeman, Dean Obadiah, and Aaron Cater on the side in just a second. Stand Up for Peace is the gig. Hang with us. All right. Jim has stepped out of the room momentarily. Yeah. To make room for the large bunch of people here. You know, it's queer, John. You think we could find another microphone? We've got Scott Blakeman here, Dean Obadiah, Aaron Cater from another Arab comedy endeavor. Scott and Dean are doing a Stand Up for Peace here at the Claremont Colleges. Why is that plural?
This is actually, we're doing Pomona, but it's Harvey Mudd, Scripps College, and Pomona. Together, they are the Claremont Colleges.
But you're going to be at Pomona.
We're Pomona, but it's part of the entire Claremont. So I think the point of anybody at the Claremont School should feel comfortable.
Someone's calling from Israel. Someone's calling from Israel. See what you guys did? See what you guys did? Dovi, what's going on over there in Israel? Help us out.
Is this Hoops?
It is Hoops.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm an expat. I've been living here a year and a half, and this is my first Israeli elections.
Okay. Can you give us a little reporting?
Well, first of all, I just got up because it's a holiday, which is awesome.
What holiday? Is it Tu B'Shvat?
No, it's election day. No one's no work today.
How do you say that in Hebrew so I can feel guilty about missing it?
And so anyways, the other cool thing is that you know, when you're watching TV in the U.S., you can't get away from stupid propaganda for all the different parties.
Yeah.
Here, there's maybe 1 hour a night that is set aside where you actually have to tune in if you want to see election propaganda, and each party gets their own amount of time.
How's the weather over there? Hot?
Well, I'm in the South, so it's going to warm up in a bit.
Okay, and do you know who you're voting for and everything?
I'm going for Kadima.
Okay.
Kadima's going to win. Now, the polls say they're going to win big. It's according to the polls, and Labor and Likud will be second and third.
Right, but it's all about, but it's parliament, so it's all about the coalition.
Okay, well, I don't want to be ignorant, so why don't you tell me what it means?
Okay, well, there's 120 seats in the parliament or the Knesset.
But what does it mean if Kadima wins?
If Kadima wins?
Yeah.
Well, they're the government that's in charge right now. So
okay.
People like me that are pretty satisfied with the way things are moving are just going to say, all right, we'll stick with this, see where it takes us.
Okay.
But honestly, no one really knows what anything, what any of this means. We'll just have to wait and see.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. Thanks for calling me, Dovey.
Take care.
Bye. Yeah, I know. It's like I have my hands full just keeping up with American politics. And, you know, we don't talk a lot about the Middle Eastern politics. I mean, when you guys do your shows, do you do question and answer afterwards?
Yeah, we do. We first come out together for like 10 minutes and we do our own separate acts.
How many are you? Q&A. Just two of you?
Just two of us. Just Dean and I. Just Dean and I.
Yeah.
And the Q&A, yeah, that's great. But I think that's, I'm glad you bring that up, Morgan. I'm glad you have us on because that is sort of a weak spot in progressive circles in general. People don't talk about it. And so-called liberals who rail against rightfully Bush and the U.S., when it comes to Israel, they just sort of shut up or it's a whole different thing. So part of our purpose of the show is just to get people talking and because it really is the key, I think, to everything going on in the world, you know, and people need to know and people need to realize that and politicians like Hillary Clinton who pander to the Jewish vote, I want Arabs and other people to know that it's not a monolithic view, that a lot of Jews like myself are not satisfied with the status quo and Kadima, and that we need to just, whoever's it, Hamas, who's ever there, sit down, talk. I don't think it's that difficult. And everybody has failed. All the leaders have failed. That's why Dean and I feel maybe a couple of comedians. And we call it the two-comedian solution, Middle East peace. So, and we've done so well so far.
Scott's more pro-Palestinian than I am, which is amazing.
So wait, are you telling me you're going to take it to the Middle East and actually facilitate some sort of peace talks?
We're going to open for the peace talks. I could do a little warm-up that I did from Jim Gaffigan's
show. Mark was talking to you like you were a crazy person. He spoke very slowly, and he chose,
yeah.
Are you saying you're going to the Middle East? No, well, but our show's not all about Middle East politics. Our show, we talk about the world. I talk a lot about being American, about President Bush. We talk about things going on in the world. And at the end, though, it's just bringing people together. The shows are generally sponsored by Arab and Jewish student groups, so it brings them together sometimes for the first time ever. And the audience is Arab and Jewish students, plus mostly are non-Arab or Jewish, just normal white kids who want to come see the show. And at the end, we do the little dialogue. We talk about poll numbers and statistics, what's going on, how many people over there are really supporting peace, because it doesn't matter our opinion if the Palestinians Israelis are not supportive of peace, and it's good. The latest poll shows over 60% of both sides still favor a two-state solution, and that's very good, even with Hamas's victory. This was a post-Hamas victory. So the election of Hamas, which only 44% of Palestinians actually voted for them in the parliamentary election, still does not mean they're rejecting a two-state solution. The Palestinians, an overwhelming majority, still want a two-state solution, and over 80% of Palestinians still support a mutual ceasefire ongoing.
Yeah, but isn't the issue really that I know it's become a fairly recent progressive issue to support the Palestinian cause, and I think it is the old hardline Jews, the Zionist Jews, believe that any concession of land is a failure, and that it's only, you know, a slippery slope towards surrendering all of it, and we're going to be in trouble. Isn't that the ongoing debate and problem?
Yeah, I know, but I think it has changed. You know, in some respects, I think people. I don't believe in pro-Palestinian or pro-Israel. I mean, I say this in the show that you can't be pro-Palestinian or pro-Israel. You have to just be pro-peace because there's no one wins in this situation. I mean, what's good for Israel is going to be good for the Palestinians ultimately and vice versa. So I don't believe there are sides really. And Dean and I are on the same page. You know, stop the violence on both sides. And, you know, people calling, wait, you can't do a moral equivalence. All violence is wrong. All innocent people being killed is wrong. I don't care if it's Israeli military or terrorists. It's the same thing. Stop it, sit down, and talk. And our show, by the way, is all laughs, and we don't say any of this except at the end. But, you know, as I said, I appreciate that we have the forum to bring it up because it really is something that people don't talk about that much.
Well, hold on. Let's see what Eli has to say in Anaheim. Eli, what's going on?
Yes, I lived, you know, I am from Jordan, and I lived there until I was 16. You know, the United States is about 30% liberals, but the Middle East is about maybe 5% liberals. The majority, 95%, is religious wackos. And you know, these people are primitive, and, you know, whatever they do, I don't blame them, because they're still living the Stone Ages. But I wonder why educated Jews who are supposed to know better decided to live in that part of the world and surround themselves by these animals. You know,
okay.
They were offered the Falkland Islands some time ago by Britain, and they have not accepted that because so many Jews, you know, are educated, but sadly they are so religious, and that's why they decided to stick in that piece of,
okay.
You know.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. It was going to get progressively more interesting after this all by his tone.
Debating where Israel should be is we're way beyond debating whether Israel should exist. Israel should exist, and it should be a state, just like Palestine should be a state next to it, and both sides having respect for each other's, you as human beings, to be quite honest. The one thing that troubles me with the unilateral withdrawal from Gaza, not one time did Sharon say, the former prime minister of Israel, say, we're withdrawing because the Palestinian people are human beings who deserve their own land. He said, we're withdrawing because we cannot financially and economically, and as a country, continue to keep this piece of land to protect 9,000 people. That's all it was about. I really wish it was more bringing together. Like, it wasn't unilateral. It was more bilateral.
Listen, you've got a Jordanian on the phone here who just called Palestinians animals.
I was confused. I'm not sure who was supposed to be offended by that. I was really at a loss.
But that's an important issue in this whole paradigm, or whatever you want to call it, is that, you know, why do... I mean, I don't know why I'm talking policy. Well, you guys are comics, and I don't know what you're going to tell me about it. But you know, what is it... That a lot of other Arab nations have a negative concept of what the Palestinians are.
And a lot of Arab nations have treated Palestinians terribly. And just recently, Jordan just kicked the Palestinians fleeing Iraq, and Jordan, they weren't allowed into Jordan. And
In Iraq, where the Palestinians were treated well, they were still not allowed to own land and not allowed to be citizens. And Saddam Hussein went out of his way to treat Palestinians well. But there's a New York Times article just earlier this week.
The Jews were treated that way in Europe many years ago.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, they've been treated badly. It's the
also, there was that Palestinian and Israeli who tried to go to Wimbledon together. Mm-hmm. And Sharon axed it immediately.
Oh, man, that was such a great setup for a joke. I really thought you were going somewhere with
my
that.
My girlfriend, you know, I'm dating.
Am I wrong? That Jew and a Palestinian go to Wimbledon.
My girlfriend.
All right.
Mark, my girlfriend is actually Israeli. She's from Haifa. She's Arab, but she's from Haifa. And she's Scotsman. She's very pretty. And I think she's dating me for immigration reasons, I'm pretty sure, which is nice because her nickname for me is Green Card, which is really adorable. She goes, hey, my little green card, there you are, little green card. But I'm bringing people together one at a time.
Well,
I'm over there recruiting little Arab girls to come to America now.
And she does a job that no Americans would do, be Dean's girlfriend. So that's the immigration argument.
Do we have I have a solution for the immigration thing. Tell me if I'm from New York, so my view is different. In New York, we love all the immigrants. I don't understand here, it's different, right? I mean, Mark, you live in New York. No one, but I think it should be like a reality show. Like if an immigrant makes it to Maine, they get a green card. How's that? Like if you're like, you're Maine, there you go. You've made it here. Go wherever you want. They stop you anywhere between Mexico and Maine. You got to go back. And I think it's fair for everyone. And Maine could use Mexicans. I've been there. It's too white. You have to go back. Go back.
Get on the mic, Cater, if you're going to talk. All right. Okay, you can share a mic with Scott. Go ahead.
I
was just going to say, if they make it to Canada, they've gone too far. You have to go home.
That's it.
But Maine, that's.
I think if they get to Canada, they go, we win.
They're better off.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, health insurance, that's right. Socialized medicine.
Yeah.
So what's going on? We talk a lot about Bush in Iraq, by the way. I'll tell you, Iraq is a lot about what's going on. And being Arab American, I'm sort of like focused on things like the Dubai ports thing, which was huge news. And it showed how out of touch Bush was, who actually said, saying no to selling the ports to Dubai sends a bad message to the Arab world. I'm like, that sends a bad message to the Arab world? What does bombing Iraq say? You know, that's like his way of inviting him to be friends on MySpace for Bush. Like, you know, are you kidding me? Let's occupy an Arab country. No, but let's sell the ports to Dubai. That makes up for it. Hey. Yeah.
Well, I think now we could all rest easy knowing that an American company will be in charge of not checking any cargo. So I think it's a wonderful. You know, Dubai actually, and Dean performed in Dubai.
I did.
It's much. They actually have high-tech security in Dubai. I mean, Dubai is as Arab as the Knicks or basketball.
I heard
team,
Dubai,
you know,
is like a space station.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
It's like this weird futuristic playland.
It's very non-Arab, and I've been to Jordan, Lebanon, the West Bank, and And it's very non-Arab.
Do you perform in all these places?
I was a hostage, actually.
A traveling hostage?
Be funny now.
Yeah, get back in.
I did a show in Dubai.
Be funny again.
I did a show with Ahmed in Dubai, and in Beirut I did a show with my friend Maysoon, and Ramallah I performed, and in Haifa.
And in Dubai, it's like all these rich Arabs that sit around going, let me tell you what it says in Quran over some Johnny Walker Black.
What's that bit you do, Cater? How do Arabs laugh? When they...
Very funny. You can almost hear me laugh audibly. It's that good, my friend. Yes.
Some Arabs do laugh. Some don't. It's just a matter
of... We have very good sense of humor. If you think not, we will kill you and burn your flag.
Oh, come on. That's Aaron Kader saying that. I denounce that. But
yeah. Well, Aaron Kader, he's playing to the
He's
Arabs.
In the acts of evil. He's in the acts of evil.
Exactly.
That's why.
Yeah, he's in the big Arab show. You guys are doing some other thing. You're reaching it together. So where are you guys? Where else are you guys going with this thing?
Well, I've been all over. We actually did the Seeds of Peace camp, talking about Maine, over the past summer. And that's how we actually got started 4 years ago, doing a series of benefits back at Stand Up New York in New York and Gotham.
I remember.
And it's really just been a great thing. So we're doing a lot of college. We're actually working on a book proposal is floating out there. And we're learning that the book industry is actually as narrow-minded as the entire entertainment industry, too. So hopefully something will come
up
with that.
Carleton College in Minnesota next month.
April 21st, Carleton College.
Oklahoma.
University of Tulsa, April 24th and April 25th. At the University of Oklahoma, so we're reaching out into the heartland.
There you go, and don't get too discouraged about the book thing. There's not a fortune to be made in books, Scott.
No, but just to have the book.
That'd be nice to have a book.
I like smelling the pages. Is that weird?
It's like I wrote this.
Yeah,
it's
a nice thing to present it. You know.
Hey, Cater, where are you going to be? Anywhere? You going to be at the Ramada Inn on Sunday?
I'll be at the Ramada Inn on Monday night.
Monday night.
I'll be at the Comedy Store always, and then I'm going to University of Michigan, University of Washington.
Michigan, there's a lot of Arabs in Michigan.
Yeah, there's a big Arab student group. I was actually just in UC Fullerton, which is we'll be at UC Irvine, the Acts of Evil.
With the Acts of Evil.
Go to our website.
That's
Pomona College Stand Up for Peace, this Wednesday.
Stand Up for Peace.
Yes.
Are you feeling a little pushed around by Aaron Kader?
Stand Up for Peace. Nice,
yeah, standupforpeace.com for Scott and Dean, and you can go to Al Jazeera for Aaron Kader. Is that what's the name of your
the
website?
Axis of Evil. Comedy.
Axis of Evil, right. Don't play into stereotype or anything, buddy. I like you, Kader. Thanks for coming, you guys.
Thank you.
Get out, all of you. Stick around. We'll do the short order news in just a second. It's about 50 past. Hear that baby crying? Is the house on fire? Who cares? Because right after this break, Mark's going to read his short order news. So sit down and shut up.
And now he came up with Red Fox in the civil rights movement, Mark Maron.
That's right. That's right. Red Fox, Malcolm X, and me. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. That is Jim Earle. You can go to markmaron.com, MarcMaron.com, and do whatever you do there. Myself, Jim Earle, and Mishna Wolf will be appearing at Steinway's this Saturday at 8 o'clock. Go to markmaron.com for info and tickets right there in the live performance section. Excellent. So, Jim... You know, tomorrow night we have cartoonist Tom Tomorrow to he's going to talk about his new book, Hell in a Handbasket.
Oh, man.
How do you like that?
I love Funky Winkerbean.
Yeah, he's done all the Funky Winkerbean since the beginning. So your weekend was nice?
Yeah, it was very nice, you know.
You had some nice food. Your woman won I don't want to call her your woman. That's a possessive thing, and that's wrong. Heather.
My lady.
Your lady. Your honey won a little award at the, not a little award. See, I'm trivializing everything. A big award at the Silver Lake Film Festival.
No, not at the Silver Lake. Another film festival. She was part of the screenplay won was nominated.
You know, the two houses down the street from me have a film festival.
Really?
No.
What are you talking about?
I'm just talking about.
Am I missing something here?
I'm just saying that
what
it's
happened?
Like every place. Like, you ever see film festivals? Like, awarded the Triple Crown Prize at the Dubuque Film Festival.
Oh, the movie's called East of Sunset. I forgot to put that in. Plug that.
Again, wasn't trying to trivialize Heather. I was just trying to raise awareness of how meaningless film festivals are once it trickles down. All they're for, which is good, is so people can see movies they wouldn't see before. But as far as awards or putting that on your blurb sheet, sometimes it's ridiculous.
It's impressive to people who don't understand things.
A lot happened in the world today, Jim.
Wait a minute. What's going on?
I was
going
to do the news thing. That's a short news.
Before I go to the news, can I say this about Israel and Palestine? I think we can solve that whole problem by just giving that land back to the American Indians. All right, go ahead.
And that's the kind of stuff you hear this weekend at Steinway's. It'll be Jim Earle, myself, and Mishna Wolf. You can go to markmaron.com and check that out.
And there's a raffle after the show.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure that you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Short Order News. Oh, here we go. After a weekend of massive protests over Republican-led immigration reforms, President Bush spent the day promoting his temporary work visas plan for non-citizens. Under Bush's plan, the temporary work visa comes with a haircut, on-the-job training, and an all-expenses-paid trip to Iraq. Researchers say that pork products from a new strain of clone pigs are actually good for your heart. The clone pigs are also unique in that they are born with lettuce, tomato, and white bread on their backs. A new gossip book on Barbara Streisand details her numerous well-known sexual partners throughout the decades. Among her lovers was Warren Beatty, whom she nicknamed Pumpkin. Beatty's nickname for Streisand was number 10,578. The book is confusing many literary customers who think it's about Streisand's time behind the wheel of a twin-engine Cessna. The book is called Cockpit. Cockpit. And that's the Mark Maron Short Order News for tonight. I had to do that twice. How often does a joke like that come down the pike? Am I wrong? Come on, am I wrong? Are you festering about something, Jim?
No, I was wondering why you didn't do the vagina butter joke.
It's like butter. All right. Tomorrow, we got cartoonist Tom Tomorrow. How'd you like that? Tomorrow, cartoonist Tom Tomorrow. How often would that happen?
You don't have that kind of wordplay on every show.
How often does that happen? Jim Earle will be here. I'll be here. We'll have funny stuff. It's going to be good. Have a good Monday night, sheeple.